Every entrepreneur has been there. Growing pains
obstacles make you
growth
stronger.
Gains.
It's the challenges that cause us to level up.
The Company Growth Podcast inspires you to keep going through the pain. I'm your host, Alicia Dominico.
Well, I think that you're always the problem. That's the thing that I want to remind leaders is that like there's just no shortage of answers. It's your resourcefulness. It's not a matter of resources. It's your ability to go find them and make use of them.
Welcome to the Company Growth Podcast. On this episode, Alicia talks with Nigel Green, a coach, consultant, and mentor for top sales teams who runs a company of one. Let's listen in.
I am a consultancy of one, a company of one, and I work with primarily healthcare companies that have a B2B offering and a sales team. I come alongside them being the company, more specifically the management team, including the sales leader, to help them think about their growth trajectory and all the ways that they can scale smarter and faster and meet the commitments that they've made to the business and to the marketplace. And so I have spent my entire career in sales and the past decade in healthcare, and healthcare found me. It wasn't one of those situations where I just knew I wanted to be a device rep or a surgical rep like some people do. It was just a way for me to earn money, and money has always been a motivator for me. I grew up modest, almost poor, but we didn't know it. Like, I never knew we were poor until I was older, and then I was like, oh wow, we just didn't have a lot. So my parents did a good job of making up for that with love, but I knew that I never wanted to be in that situation again. So money was always a big motivator, and in healthcare sales, you can make money. I was okay at sales, but because of playing football for so long, I played it in college. I have always been very comfortable and familiar with being coached. So I think that made me a good coach. And so I really excelled when I took my first management position. So when I had a team of sellers that had a lot of the same anatomy of me, of being money motivated, competitive driven, fear of failure, all these kind of like external significance and contribution indicators that you get from the world. I did well anchoring what the business needed to what they were already motivated to do. And so I had a lot of success. By the time I was 30, I was an executive for a Fortune 300 healthcare company here in the States. Then I quickly realized that that is just not what I wanted to do. It created a lot of pain in the form of a misalignment between the things that I valued and what corporate America wanted me to value. So I quit. And then swung the pendulum to early stage companies and found out very quickly that it was the same misalignment, but it just manifested in other ailments and pains for me. And so in May of 2018, made the tough decision to quit a high paying job and move to middle of nowhere, Kentucky, and decide to build a business coaching people that do what I did. And recently I bumped into some data. My friend Rory Vaden was on Lewis Howes' podcast talking about that all the data points to, whether you're a coach in a company or an independent consultant like me, you are most capable to help someone who is doing what you used to do. And really, I've just built a business around helping people that want what I thought I wanted get what they want. And it's very fulfilling for me. And so I'm doing the same thing. I'm just doing it on my terms, and it has provided an opportunity to align with some of the lifestyle aspirations that I want for me and my family.
But if Nigel's values didn't align with corporate America's, how could he possibly coach people working in a corporate American environment? I asked him to tell me more about how this disconnect can work or not work.
I don't think that there's anything, well, maybe there are things inherently wrong with corporate culture, but I don't think that it's a total indictment on the value system. So, you know, at the time I was a 30-year-old executive. I just had a son born. And then when I quit and jumped into a startup culture, I had a 2-year-old son and a daughter that was just born. And so for me, I always said in my head and on paper that family was the most important thing. Yet, if you were to ask my wife, she would say that I would tell her things like, you're just going to have to deal with doctor's appointments and stuff like that. Like, I just can't go. I don't have time. And so there was a real measurable disconnect between what I said was important to me and the way my calendar was visibly showing others what was important to me. And I had to reconcile that. I had to have a rumble around what really is important to me. And at the end of the day, it is family. That's the most important thing for me right now. And so for other people, you know, maybe that's not, maybe they don't have family. You know, like I coach people that kids and marriage are things that they want to have, but they don't yet have, or that they're in a later season of life where the kids don't need them as much. You know, they've got 18-year-old kids or 20-year-old kids that are off to college and they're, you know, in their mid-50s. And this is, it creates a lot of fulfillment and joy for them to be a part of a team. Otherwise, they'd be in a very empty, lonely household. So I don't know that it's a total indictment on corporate America. I just think that for me, with 2 young kids, where family was such an important piece of my identity, it didn't work.
I wanted to know what Nigel thought as an experienced coach, what one of the biggest goals for business leaders should be. What's the number one thing a business leader can change to hit their targets more efficiently?
Well, so one thing that has really helped me is for a lot of people that are successful in sales and in business, the entrepreneurs, they have this insatiable appetite for one more. And Paul Jarvis wrote a book called Company of One, and he said one of the most effective things you can do is put an upper threshold on what you're willing to do in a year. And maybe that's number of clients, maybe that's a revenue number, maybe it's an income number. And then when you get there, having the discipline to say, that's enough for now, because it's just a year or a shorter period. It's not forever. This would be a win for the year. And so I've been practicing that for a few years. And what I've found is that it forces me to be more creative in how I get there, right? So instead of just thinking about that top line revenue or that low line profit number, how do I do it and maximize my return on effort and my return on time? Because I could work a lot harder for an incremental increase in income or revenue, or I could work fundamentally differently, change the return on time and effort, and enjoy the time away from work that should be afforded to me if I can be more efficient in how I achieve that top line number. And so for me, it's been about less is actually more. So setting a goal and saying, this is the number. It's a win if we hit this number. Now the challenge for me as the entrepreneur is to figure out how to get there with the least amount of strain on the resources, which being my time, my energy, and the amount of money I have to spend to acquire a customer, market myself, or deliver the commitments I've made to my customers.
What do entrepreneurs and executives value? This is a question I think about a lot, so I wanted to get Nigel's take on it.
There are probably a lot of folks listening to this where they thought that they valued autonomy, right? So people leave out and go do their own thing because they think that there's some sense of autonomy that they're going to get for being their own boss. And I think autonomy is a trap, okay? Because you'll find out very quickly that when you get into running your own business, whether you are a company of one or you decide to build a company, that you now have other people's lives that you're responsible for and you're accountable to. You now have customers that really are your boss. You have other shareholders within the business, particularly if you went and raised money, that are your boss. And so this notion that you're running away from some sense of commitment to others in pursuit of autonomy is a trap. And so there are probably also within that subset of individuals, people that if they got really clear about what was actually important to them, they might find that being an entrepreneur or being a freelancer is a heck of a lot harder than just going back and getting a job with a different company. That if you can get really clear on the amount of money you want or the lifestyle that you want to live and how you want to do your work, where you want to do your work, who you want to work with, the mission you want to be a part of, it might actually just be easier. There may be a better return on your effort, return on your time to go get a job than there is to build this business. And so entrepreneurship is a great thing. You can be an entrepreneur and have that mindset inside of another person's company. And that's one of the things that I see across the spectrum with the folks that I coach. They are undoubtedly entrepreneurial. They're just helping another founder who may not have the skills around sales and marketing and building a team grow their dream. And so it's not always the case that in order for you to be an entrepreneur, you have to leave a company. You can do that inside an organization and meet all your needs. The real work is that it's not just binary, quit and go start your own company. Maybe it's, this is what I want to do, and you do it inside of somebody else's dream.
So what does a sales leader look like when they have arrived in their role? What does that look like from Nigel's point of view as someone who works with sales leaders all the time?
So the folks I work with have teams of people across the country. Most of them, they have outside sales team and inside sales team. So it's a complex machine that's responsible for customer creation and revenue attainment. And I tell them, you have arrived when they don't need you. And it's a scary kind of proposition to put out to someone who in their identity is that, you know, they're the leader, they're indispensable. Well, part of being indispensable is that you are very dispensable. If the machine can't run without you, you haven't built it very well. And so what makes you indispensable is being able to build systems and ecosystems where you are dispensable. That's what everyone wants. And if you can do that, you are recession proof. You're basically ironclad, because I haven't met one CEO or one founder of a fast growing company that doesn't want a leader that can build a machine. Building a machine requires complex parts moving. It's not one part that orchestrates everything. It's very autonomous. And I think making that shift and realizing that it's not your job as the leader to do everything, but to hire people that are capable of doing everything. And then once you make that identity shift, that's when I think you can really begin to have some breakthroughs and see profound growth in who you are and what you're capable of doing. And because so much of what we get trapped into doing is actually not work. It's just talking about work. It's emails and Slack messages and one-on-ones. And that's not really work. It's the deep work where it's you on a whiteboard or you in an open document and you're thinking about complex problems that your customers face or that change the way business as usual is being conducted. That's actually work. And that rarely gets done by most leaders. Most of what they conflate as work is just talking about work. And so when you can build a machine that's capable of you not being there to watch it all the time, then you can actually go do work. Sales is about meaningful conversations. Okay, that can be with someone that hasn't yet bought from us that we think could buy from us. It could be with someone that is happy and there's an opportunity to serve them with a new offering or do more of what we're already doing. Or a meaningful conversation could be resolving an issue with the product or service. If it's not that, it's not sales. And so there's a lot of updating the CRM. There's a lot of typing in meeting notes that their manager has asked them to do. There's a lot of activity for the sake of trying to get a meeting that feels like work, but it's really not. And so I think that there's probably a lesson for all of us to look at how we're actually spending our time and get really clear on what are the very few activities and all the things that we could do. There's a select few that have a higher likelihood of generating meaningful results. And those are the things that we should do. It's Peter Drucker said this, do first things first and then do second things not at all.
This is the Company Growth Podcast, after all, so I wanted to talk about growth. What in Nigel's mind was a key component of growth, and what's the crucial ingredient to get there?
There are three ways to grow any business, and two of them, I get the metaphorical eye roll at me, like, come on, is it that simple? But yet, upon further inspection, they don't even think about it. The first is raising your price. And everybody pushes back and says, well, I can't raise my price. There's no way I can do that. Well, there are a lot of companies that are raising their price without you really knowing it. Okay, so let me give you some recent examples. So a lot of companies are facing this, the inflation. It's a real problem. So instead of raising the price on the good, they're just giving you less in the same package and keeping the price the same. That is effectively raising your price. There is a big shift to the subscription economy. So instead of paying for a toothbrush, well, you can subscribe to Smile Direct or all these other toothbrush services that send you a new head, send you a battery every month. They've effectively raised the price because you weren't going to buy it on that type of transaction frequency, and now they've put you into a situation through adding more value, perceived value, you've raised your price through a subscription model. So that's the first way, is raising price. Second thing is getting more customers. Well, that seems so blatantly obvious, but not a lot of entrepreneurs or even, you know, mid-market companies have a real clear understanding of who their ideal customer is and the total addressable market for each of those personas, and then have a plan to aggressively target and onboard those customers. They just fall trapped to business is good enough, so we have a net and we'll catch whatever comes in, versus pushing things away and only taking on business that meets the ideal customer persona. And then the third, and I think this one is harder to do, easier to say, sell your customer something else. The reality is they may be happy with what you're doing, but there's probably some ancillary service that they're getting from somewhere else that you could easily do. And so if you think through raising your price, having a plan to get more of your ideal customer, and then selling all of those customers something else, I mean, you can 3X a business pretty quickly.
Nigel has such deep insight into the values behind leadership and how to work intelligently toward goals at an efficient pace, working smarter, not harder. These were his closing thoughts.
Well, I think that one thing that I spend a lot of time working with my clients on is creating a specialization within the sales team. It's really hard to grow when the limiting factor on the business is that there's all this context switching between prospecting or having conversation with a customer to go over the terms and conditions and to get them onboarded, and then account management and customer success. Like, when you're having to toggle between those three very different activities, it burns a lot of mental calories, and it creates fatigue for the seller, and ultimately it stymies growth. Because if you can have people just focusing on prospecting, and then another team that just focuses on closing, and then a success team, or you know, segmenting your buying process into more discrete tranches, the more effective you're going to be. The thing that you have to be careful of is you need to do all of that specialization, so long as it doesn't make it harder for the customer to buy, which gets into the next, I think, nonsensical behavior that I see in business, which is that they segment the market, right? So whether it be marketing or sales, they're both departments are guilty of it, but they segment the market, whether, you know, customers and prospects, right? That's the market, by some easy, lazy, or arbitrary medium that has nothing to do with how the customer buys. In the States, we see this done by geographical territories. It's probably the prevailing theme. So because it's easy for us, we're going to break up the country, or maybe in Canada, it's by province or something like that. But we're going to break it up into smaller geographical areas and assign it to an individual. Well, the problem with that is that if you can have a really good seller in a really bad geography, and you're going to let them go because they're underperforming. Conversely, you could have a lazy, average rep who just happens to be in a really good geographical market with one or two really big customers, and you think that they're the best thing since buttered bread. And so what I coach is to segment the market by the way the customer wants to buy. If physical proximity isn't required for the sale, why don't we have geographical boundaries for the market? Why not segment the customer by the way they want to buy or by the deal size? There's some more meaningful way to segment the market that if you do that hard work of figuring that out, you'll find you actually can grow a lot faster.
For more information on Nigel Green, visit nigelgreen.co. Find more episodes of the Company Growth Podcast on YouTube or at anchor.fm/companygrowthpodcast or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you've got a company growth story you'd like to share, reach out to Tangible Words. We'd love to hear your story and use it to inspire others to beat their own company growing pains. Until next time, thank you for listening to the Company Growth Podcast.